Academia is more than a workplace. People choose to pursue a career in academia because they are passionate about science. They are eager to keep pushing the boundaries of our understanding of the world. Researchers have an important role in today's society, but they are also burdened with a huge pressure to perform, to compete, to sacrifice themselves. Now, academia is also a workplace. As such, it should provide reasonable conditions for researchers to thrive and give their best. Because researchers are people. People can crack under too much stress. It is time to start talking about mental health and well-being in academia, and to do something about it. This podcast is about researchers and their journey through the challenges of today's academia. This is a podcast about people. In this episode, we meet Camilla, a multidisciplinary globetrotter with a determination to become a university professor. Someone who has always seen higher education as the way to her independence. Blessed with the capacity for great insight, Camilla is someone who has really learned what works for her as an academic and what doesn't. I am Federica Bressan, host and producer of this podcast. Join me on this journey. Before we begin, a courtesy warning. This podcast contains psychologically sensitive topics like anxiety, depression, and ADHD. It does not provide psychological or psychotherapeutic support. If you are experiencing severe distress, please contact your personal physician, local ambulance, a distress helpline, or a service for crisis counseling. This podcast is brought to you by the Researchers Mental Health Observatory, cost action number 19117. For more information, visit our website at remo-network.eu. Remo is spelled remo-network.eu. Camilla's story is interesting because she is someone with an acute awareness of her own weaknesses and struggles, as well as of her strengths and potential. She is critical of academia today, but the insightful person she is, she also knows what she brings to the table. Camilla admits having suffered from mental health issues almost all of her life, and she was recently diagnosed with ADHD. Her story reminds us that while academia should not be such a toxic environment as to break healthy people that walk into it, it should actually be so healthy to accommodate people with a history of any variety of mental health issues. In a way, after all, who doesn't have or who hasn't had a rough time where they didn't quite have it all together? And this is a good time to remember that our focus should not only be on mental health, as in absence of pathologies, but on well-being, which is a condition where people thrive, not barely survive, not get by, not manage to meet a deadline without a full-blown meltdown, but thrive. Let's start from the beginning. We have said that Camilla is someone who admittedly approached academia with a history of mental health issues, which she is going to describe in a minute. When did her struggles start?
I think it started in high school, so a long time ago, almost 20 years ago.
From those days, Camilla recalls having difficulties adjusting to the social aspect of transitioning from middle school to high school and keeping up with homework and the importance of context, that is your family culture and your own personality, which at that age is still plastic and easy to influence.
I was struggling a lot, and my family situation was a little bit complicated. So it was a very, very difficult time.
Fast forward a couple of years, Camilla is an undergraduate student. She gives an example of one of the things she used to find difficult then.
where I used to live, you only have oral exams. So you don't have written exams. So for me, going to the professor and just being asked questions about my knowledge, that was incredibly distressful for me.
Mental illness is not just anxiety or depression, these clear-cut labels we've grown accustomed to hearing. Everybody's personality is a complex constellation of different parts that somehow form a dynamic unity. Many people feel nervous during oral exams or with public speaking. That doesn't mean they're ill or anything. Some people feel too much, but it's hard to define what's wrong with them. Maybe nothing is wrong with them, it's just who they are. Knowing ourselves is a lifelong process. We all question ourselves from time to time and wonder whether we are normal or not. Looking back, this is what Camilla says she thinks was going on with her in those years.
I think I was depressed for a very, very long time. I just didn't realize because, I don't know, I think many listeners would be familiar with being high-functioning depressed. So I was depressed, but I didn't care. I kept going and going and going until basically you have to stop because you can't function anymore.
I kept going and going and going until you reach a breaking point. Until you hit that wall and cannot function anymore. Isn't this an all too common tendency among young academics? We tend to overlook our needs, to underestimate our limits. It's nice to have all this energy. Can you imagine the value that this has for academia? What an asset smart, educated, hyper-focused people like Camilla are for the research world. Please know your value. But why do so many young people full of energy enter academia and emptied, spent people are spit out on the other side? Besides drive and passion, what was the reason for Camilla to, quote, keep going and going and going?
For me, it was, you need to be independent. You're going to need a job. And basically, I didn't want to go and work in a 9-to-5 office. Which for me, there's nothing wrong with a 9-to-5 office, but for me, I would have been dead.
Well, that's funny. Many will resonate with not aspiring to a regular 9-to-5 job. But isn't it ironic that in order not to punch cards at 9 and 5, we are actually willing to work 24/7?
Exactly. Exactly. But because I could learn new things. First of all, working in a lab, it's awesome because it's practical and it works great with my way of thinking. So I love working in the lab. But even studying at home for 10 hours, you learn if you are in a good mood and you can do things properly, you're learning something new. It's like cracking a code. You try to put many pieces together and you want to find a solution to that particular problem. Or in my case, interpretation of scientific data, you try your best to crack the code. So yeah, to me, it makes perfect sense.
It actually makes perfect sense to forget what time it is when you're doing what you love. And come on, research is not meant to be a 9-to-5 job, because it's more than a job. But how much is too much? How to draw healthy boundaries? How to make it sustainable? Camilla didn't know what the reason for her distress was until a recent diagnosis shed light on at least part of it.
I was recently diagnosed with ADHD, and people with ADHD are very prone to rumination and negativity, and it's very difficult to stop your mind, let's say.
The mind, our most valuable asset as academics. What Camilla's story shows us is that some of us walk into academia with our own history of mental health issues. Issues that were not caused by academia, that arose way before we even began our PhD. Everybody's experience in academia is subjective because it's filtered through the prism of their personal history. This is Camilla's experience, the difficulties she has faced, and how these difficulties interplayed with her history and personality.
For my PhD, I was quite isolated, which is a very common experience for many PhDs, being left alone with their own projects. And again, it's a very common experience, but for me, it was particularly distressful. Because again, I think it depends also on personal circumstances. Maybe another person, a more extroverted person, or with a different family situation. Like, there are many factors that contribute to this. And now that I'm a postdoc, I'm very lucky that I have a fantastic job, a very prestigious fellowship. But again, moving to another continent in the middle of pandemic, moving houses 4 times in 4 months, not having health insurance, having a great amount of difficulty, you know, getting a visa to America, and again being left alone again on the continent, in a new environment, in the middle of a pandemic, these are the things that are contributing to my mental health at the moment.
Speaking of applying for a travel visa and all of the things required to manage the research work, young academics often report spending more time than they wish they did with administration, paperwork, which takes time away from actually working on your project. And that can be frustrating.
It is. It is. You know, you're supposed to do research, and in the end, you're just organizing things.
There is so much that revolves around research. It's not just the research work itself. It's where you do it, who you do it with, and the support system that is made available to you. For example, support with paperwork and administration. The importance of the environment cannot be overstated. For someone with ADHD, for example, a quiet room to sit in is fundamental. And Camila has not had a good experience with something that is ever more common, open space offices.
I would definitely avoid open space offices. A thing that I hated during my PhD, and unfortunately many universities are choosing this option because they want to fit a lot of students in one space. But for a person with the ADHD, it's just a nightmare. Think about having 30, 40, 50 people in the same room all together working and chatting. And oh my God, it's just a nightmare. So please don't do it. Think better the space, the postgraduate and PhD and an academic environment, and make it a good environment to do research, not just because you want to save money and fit as many people as you want.
In spite of all the difficulties, be it a non-ideal workspace or a suboptimal support with administration, something that many young researchers have in common is that they are resilient people. They plow through, finding strength and motivation one way or the other. And they deserve respect for this. Here is where Camila found her own strength and motivation.
I knew that if I could, you know, stick to my plan and I get the results, I would be able to support myself and have a career. And for me, that was incredibly important. You know, being independent. As academics, we tend to completely ignore our needs, because we love what we do, and also because we work a lot, that there's no shortcut. But I think also for me, it was because I knew that that was the way for me to be fulfilled in my career.
No matter how strong you are, how strong your motivation is, there will be slow days and low times when all you want is reach out and talk to someone. Camila did have those days. I asked her who she turned to.
Basically everyone. Seriously, I talk to professors, friends, colleagues. I think one key thing is the environment. There are environments which are very supportive and other environments that are not. So I was not particularly lucky. And it's a fact. But in the end, I managed to, you know, to find the strength to, you know, to finish and to do what I was supposed to do. But because I knew that, well, I'm very passionate about my job, as you might understand, but also because it really for me was the chance of a lifetime. So I wanted to finish, and thank God I did, because I was true.
It takes courage to reach out to other people, and how they respond will make a difference in how we choose our next moves. It depends whether we feel validated or rejected, whether we feel that we can trust them or not. This is what Camilla says about her experience opening up to the people around her.
I'm very open about my struggles, and I always try to find a solution. I'm a believer that if you look hard enough, you will find a solution. And the worst thing that I've encountered is talking about my problems and having people dismiss them. Or you could call that a form of gaslighting. Like, you don't have a problem. This is normal. Which is not, by the way, if anyone is listening, this is absolutely not normal. You are more than entitled to voice your opinions, your struggles, and being listened, and to have support from your institution, by the way. It's their problem if they cannot help you.
Getting help from others is important, but there are things we can do to help ourselves. Not just when we are close to a breaking point, but good habits that we practice on a regular basis. In the previous stories on this podcast, we have heard Carla and Dilara talk about art courses or yoga and meditation. Let's hear what Camilla has done to be kind to herself, to go easy on herself.
My form of self-help was taking weeks off. No, at the time, now I do. And I advise anyone who's listening and struggling with mental health, please take a break. You're entitled to take breaks and it will make you feel so much better. Back then, no, I thought I didn't deserve to take a break. But my form of self-care involved therapy. I changed 3-4 therapists at the time. I did yoga, of course. And then other things like my other hobbies. So for me, it was video games were really important for me. Rediscovering my passions I abandoned for my PhD. So rediscover yourself and rediscover your hobbies. That was fundamental.
Camilla points out the importance of friends in our life. They don't need to be academics. They may know nothing about academia. They just need to know you and care for you. A support system that sometimes it's quite literally an effective way of outsourcing our sanity.
And I was lucky enough that, especially during the last part of my PhD, I found some very good friends. And they really helped me. Maybe, I don't know if they understood my struggles, but they really helped me to keep me balanced. So they were instrumental for me to finish my PhD for sure.
Then I asked Camilla what the reaction of her peers was when she opened up about her struggles, and whether she thinks that maybe they were going through the same struggles themselves.
I had all types of reactions. Some people, they said nothing. Some other people, they were very, very supportive. I don't think necessarily that it's the thing that people are not going through the same. I think that some people are not very self-aware. Some people don't know what to do. Some people, admitting something like this makes you very vulnerable. And not everybody is comfortable being vulnerable to other people. You're basically telling people what's your greatest weakness. So I don't think everybody is comfortable being vulnerable. Thank God I am. Because I think that it's the only way that, you can overcome certain difficulties is by sharing with other people and understanding that you're not the only one. You are special, but not that special.
You are special, but not that special. That's a very nice way of combining the fact that we are all unique while sharing common experiences and therefore having a common ground to start connecting with each other. One thing is for sure. Despite the difficulties that we may encounter at one point or another, there's something that we always have to come to terms with: ourselves. We may grow, learn, and evolve, but some things never change. So I was curious to ask Camilla whether after so many years in academia, she still struggles with the same issues the same way. A lifelong struggle with the same issues sounds exhausting. Has she found a way to navigate academia? Is it difficult today as it was years ago?
No, it's not actually difficult all the time. This is a very good question. there are strategies that I didn't even know that I've learned through the years that actually work for people for ADHD. And I think the best advice that I can give to researchers is that I was trying to copy what other people were doing. Okay, if I study that amount of hours, or I'm going to be super social and do a lot of networking, and find what works for you. Find what makes you feel okay. You don't need to be uncomfortable. You need to enjoy what you're doing. Difficulties are going to be there. That's a given. It's a job, like every job. But you can still enjoy what you're doing, and you need to find your own way. I know, for example, that I need to be in a silent environment. I need to have certain conditions to be focused. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Or I know that after a while with other people, I'm going to be spent. Like I won't be able to interact with people anymore. And you need to listen to those cues. Or I know, for example, that presenting with a script doesn't work for me because I can't read while I'm presenting. It doesn't make, like, if I look at the piece of paper, it's like gibberish to me. It's very weird to explain. But find what works for you. And keep trying and talk to people. There are a lot of, for example, groups on Facebook that have been incredibly helpful to me. Find your own community and start talking about it. There are going to be people that are going to be helpful, and they're going to be happy to listen to you.
In the second episode of this podcast, Dilara pointed out the importance of peer solidarity. I asked Camilla if she agrees with that, that peer solidarity is not the only form of support we need, but one that we cannot do without.
Yes. You know, maybe I think the students, they're so competitive sometimes. I think that competition between students should not be an issue as it is. Maybe, you know, talking more with other students, with other PhDs, and sharing, you know, your experience with everybody.
A good way to connect with your colleagues is to do something together. Not something work-related, like a seminar or a meeting. Something social, outside the four walls of the lab. Camilla is trying to organize some of these activities herself.
Because most of the times, postdocs are very lonely. And they don't have an outlet where they can actually even meet each other. Think about COVID. So I think that events, meetings, informal meetings, not just, you know, we meet because there's a seminar, but informal meetings where you can be more free and talk about struggles or anything. You get to know each other. And I think that many, many institutions just forget that. And I think it's very important.
Coming to a close with the third episode of this podcast, we can say that all of the stories we have heard so far with Carla, Dilara and Camilla showed us that academia is a beautiful, tough place, where there is no shortage of challenges, where rarely things go according to plan, and you don't need to look hard to find reasons to complain. The message with which Camilla leaves us is precisely about this, about knowing that things are not always fair, but they make us who we are. There is humility and wisdom in appreciating the challenges on our way, in learning when to fight and when to let go. Much in academia needs to be improved because people deserve better. But as they say, what stands in the way becomes the way, and Camilla has not missed the lessons along her way.
Believe it or not, I wouldn't change anything, because it made me a better person today. It wasn't fair, but I am much better, and I'm a very different person now, and I'm very happy of the person that I am today.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more episodes, please check out our website at remo-network.eu. Remo is spelled remo-network.eu. This podcast was brought to you by the Researchers Mental Health Observatory, Cost Action number 19117. I am Federica Bressan, and I am the host and producer of this podcast. Additional audio editing by Jeff Villens. Thank you to everyone who stepped forward and bravely shared their stories. You are teaching tools for the rest of us. And a final remark: your well-being matters. This podcast does not provide psychological or psychotherapeutic support. If you are experiencing severe distress, please contact your personal physician, local ambulance, distress helpline, or a service for crisis counseling. Now.